Welcome to Geburtsgeschichten Podcast. My guest today is my dear friend Chiara, and we've actually recorded this episode more than a year ago. Back then, I had a second podcast called Birth Stories from Around the World, but I have since decided to discontinue that podcast and integrate all the episodes into this podcast. This podcast is usually in German, but once in a while, we have English-speaking guests, so welcome if this is your first episode that you've tuned into. There are more English-speaking episodes in the feed, so if you scroll back, all the episodes that are in English are marked with the words ENG for English, so you can look back. Chiara is a dear friend of mine and a wonderful self-nourishment coach, so I am shamelessly promoting her work a little bit here. So she is, as I said, a self-nourishment coach or a nourishment coach and a postpartum doula in training, supporting high responsibility women and overwhelmed mamas to get to the root of their burnout, not just another self-care routine, but real lasting change. If you're the one everyone relies on at home and at work, running on empty and tired of trying the next five-step fix that never quite sticks, Chiara's work goes deeper. It is root-level one-on-one support to untangle the patterns keeping you stuck in the loop so you can actually rest, reconnect, and feel like yourself again. And if you're listening in real time this September 2026, Chiara's offering a discount on her signature session, The Root Story, a 90-minute deep dive to get to the root of what's really going on. And you can DM her for that, the word root, on Instagram or email her. And you can find her on her website, chiaragalati.com or at chiaragalati_ on Instagram. Of course, I'll put that in the show notes. But now I hand over to Chiara to tell us the story of the birth of her beautiful daughter.
Geburtsgeschichten. Ich bin Thea Maya. In diesem Podcast erzählen Frauen von ihrer Schwangerschaft, der Geburt und dem Wochenbett.
Chiara, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, would you like to introduce yourself to my listeners? Who are you? What are you doing? Where in the world are you? And what's your family like?
Oh, so many big questions to start. I'm Chiara. I am a self-nourishment coach. I work with busy, burnt-out entrepreneurs to support them to create a little bit more space and find personal tools to help them move away from burnout and bring a bit more peace and spaciousness into their lives. I live in Bali, Indonesia, and my family, it's me and my daughter. I'm a single mom, and that's pretty much my family at the moment.
Wonderful. And can you tell us a little bit also about your background, where you grew up and where you've lived? Because I know that you have pretty much lived around the world.
Yeah. I was born in Paris and I grew up in Singapore. I finished my high school in the south of France. And then I have lived in Australia. I've traveled a lot in Asia. I have lived in London, probably the longest. I was in London for about 9 years. I lived in Portugal, in Mexico, back in Portugal, moved around for a while, and now here in Bali.
Yes, and you gave birth to your daughter in Mexico, which we'll be talking about in a second. Before we talk about your pregnancy, what do you know about your own birth and how you have been birthed?
Yeah, I actually didn't know a lot about it until I got pregnant and started asking questions. I was never that close to my mother, and it's not something that we ever really spoke about. And so from asking, I found out that I was born cesarean. I know that my parents were trying for, I think, 2 years before they got pregnant. And at the time in Paris in the 80s, it was common practice to do cesarean. It was also common practice to be under general anesthetic for the cesarean. I then don't really know, you know, if I was held at all after I was pulled out of her stomach. I was told that I had the cord wrapped around my neck, and so it was somewhat of a, let's say, emergency cesarean, although from what I understand now, that's not really, it's not really a thing. It's more of a medical practice than a reality. And I believe I was breastfed for about 3 months and then switched over to formula, which apparently was like the common recommendation at the time in Paris, in France. I have like little inklings of the kind of early parenting style, and it's definitely very different to my choices as a parent, but to each their own.
Yes. So the pregnancy of your daughter, were you planning to conceive her when you did? And tell us a little bit about where you were living, what you were up to at that time.
Yeah. It was kind of planned. There was definitely a decision to have children, to start a family, and a choice to stop using contraception. And but it wasn't like, hey, we're ready, we have a home, let's have a kid right now. So yeah, kind of planned and kind of not. I was living in Mexico with my partner, and we had recently arrived. Maybe 6 months before or something, before I found out I was pregnant. And it was a very interesting year. My father had passed away the Christmas before. October before that, I had just closed my business in London and left London after 9 years. So I left London, went to Portugal. My father was sick. He then passed away. And so I was in Mexico in this kind of very big year, dealing with closing up my life after 9 years in London, after 15 years of hospitality, you know, going through the waves of grief of having lost a parent. And I was also studying coaching. So it was all happening at the same time. The coaching, I think, was a really beautiful support and focus to kind of take me through the process. And I felt very held with it. But yeah, it was a very interesting year to find myself pregnant in, because it was so big in so many ways. And then also from someone who'd always worked, suddenly I was, you know, studying and living in Mexico and not really working.
Yeah. And it was also the pandemic, even though Mexico, I think, wasn't that affected by lockdowns and stuff. But I think that also played like a role in that time. I think everyone who fell pregnant during COVID had like an imprint of that.
Definitely. Yeah. It wasn't that bad. Where we were living was like a small surf town on the coast of Mexico. And so it wasn't felt there. Having been through one of the lockdowns in London and then some of the lockdown in Portugal, Mexico was very like free and open and quite relaxed comparatively.
So how did you find out that you were pregnant? I know that you're very in tune with your body. Did you feel anything after conception, even before you could take a test?
Oh, this is interesting, actually. I felt off. I felt off and my cycle was late. And I don't remember if I was very, very on time with my cycle, but I was tracking my cycle and let's say it was more or less. And so it was late and there was a few things happening at the same time. My mother and brother were coming to visit, and there was a very stressful situation at home with my partner. And so let's say a lot of things were in the air. And so I wasn't really in my day to day of like being more in tune with myself and having all this space around myself to really feel what's going on. But I felt off and I kept thinking like, oh, my period is late. This is, you know, it's late. It's a week late. It's 2 weeks late or whatever else. And all of these big things are happening. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe it's the stress. Maybe it's other things. And my family arrive and we have this time together and I wasn't feeling great. And I'm thinking, it's been a couple of weeks and I'm thinking, okay, I really need to take a pregnancy test. And we were in Oaxaca, you know, visiting, going for food and drinks. And like, and I don't really drink alcohol at the best of times, but, you know, I was having some cocktails and I felt really off. I had a day where I felt really nauseous. And the next day I was like, right, I just need to get into a pregnancy test. I have to find out what's going on. But I didn't want my mom and brother to know. I'm not that close with them. I didn't need everyone to know. So I was in a Walmart in Mexico and literally ran, grabbed a pregnancy test, went into the most horrible, disgusting bathroom you can imagine, like just all weird metal, no toilet paper, quickly peed on a stick, and then had this result in my bag and got in the car with my partner, my mother and my brother to go for this long drive and was like, I don't want to tell anyone, but I'm like holding this secret. And that day that I found out that I was in fact, because the tests now tell you, I think it was like, I was already 5 weeks pregnant. That day was actually the 1 year anniversary of my dad's death, which was a kind of weird, I don't know, kind of weird wink from the universe, I think.
Yes. And how did you proceed in terms of finding a care provider in Mexico? I have no idea about the medical system. I don't know if you've had regular insurance or if you had a private insurance. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about birthing in Mexico and how you went about it.
Yeah. I had no insurance. Maybe I shouldn't say that. No, I had no insurance. My first step was to go for an ultrasound, and I knew that not too far from where I live, there is a birth clinic. Mexico has a really big culture of midwifery, midwives. It's like their tradition. And a lot of the things that we see now all over the world, actually a lot of their traditions do come from Mexico, which is really cool. And this birth clinic is a small center that had like four rooms and was opened by this guy who is actually a doctor, but he comes from a family of midwives. So I went there for my first ultrasound. It was early days, but they were able to pick up the heartbeat and then was just kind of wrapping my head around this whole situation. The rest of my care was a little bit, I don't want to say it was all over the place. That's what I was going to say, but that doesn't seem like the right thing to say. I didn't have continual care from the beginning to the end with one person. I did a few different ultrasounds, maybe four, I think, in my whole pregnancy. One of them was an extra one because I had a bit of pain, but I didn't really feel the need for continued ultrasounds. I contacted a local midwife who I met with a couple of times. And then, I don't know, it was a few months later or something. So I had met with her every month. And so they listen for the heartbeat. They check the measurement of your belly. And, you know, you chat about how you're feeling and thing. And that was my continued care. That was my care plan, was to birth at home with this midwife. And something happened and I didn't feel the same about that relationship anymore. So I decided to find somebody else. But this is a small town, so there weren't a lot of people around. And I needed someone who spoke a decent level of English. I didn't want like a very local midwife who I couldn't really communicate with, because it's a pretty important thing to be able to communicate clearly with your midwife. I was recommended by another friend of mine who was pregnant also to maybe speak to a doula. I hadn't planned on it, but she had said that she and her partner had spoken with a doula and that she'd found it very supportive to kind of mentally and emotionally prepare for the birth. And so that's what we did. We met with her. She happened to be French. And I'm half French. So that was really nice. So I was working with this doula who lived locally. And then I found, through speaking to a lot of different people, I found another midwife who lived in another part of Mexico, who was also French. And we spoke online and she and I connected really well. And so the plan was for her to then come to the town where I live for the time of the birth. And so in between, we would have calls and prepare like that. So that was my care plan. With the doula, we made like a preparation. And so my plan B was to be able to go to this birth clinic where I did that first ultrasound if I needed it. And the plan C was that like the hospital was in town again, if I needed it. And I felt very good with all of that.
Can you just talk a little bit about the cost of all of that when you didn't have insurance, because then it was all out of pocket?
Yeah, it was all out of pocket. I do not have the prices in my mind right now, but it was not expensive. It was, I wish I would have prepared that before. Because I don't, yeah, it was obviously two and a bit years ago now. And so I don't have the prices. I believe that I would have spent maybe around 1,500 euros between my doula and my midwife and the clinic, because I ended up birthing in the clinic. And so I had to pay for staying there for that night.
Okay, so it is a bit of money, but compared to, I think, lots of other places, you would just pay that for the doula with the midwife and not both of them together. And also, your midwife traveled and stayed for quite a considerable amount of time in your town. So before we get to the birth, how were you feeling in your pregnancy? How did the pregnancy go, both physically but also mentally?
At the beginning, so I found out at the end of December that I was pregnant, and my family was visiting. And on my birthday, at the start of January, I got COVID, and it really messed me up. I think the combination of first trimester nausea and COVID was a real shock to my system. It was a few weeks of really feeling incredibly nauseous, really dizzy, really just out of sorts, and really just not good in my body. But I'm going to put that mostly to COVID, because yeah, from my memory, it's just this like weird, like foreign feeling in your body. So it wasn't a good combination, and it lasted for weeks. My first trimester, I did have a lot of nausea and a lot of emotional processing. And I think, like, you know, it was my first pregnancy and I didn't have a lot of knowledge about all of these things as I do now. I didn't have any friends near me at the time who'd been going through pregnancy. So it was really a first time for me. It was all very new. So I know a lot more now, but definitely it took me by surprise, the emotional aspect, this intensity of the process that you go through, and this feeling of kind of death and rebirth, the releasing of the old and the stepping into the unknown. And I mean, I know now that it's just like an endless process of surrender and adaptation and growth. And I mean, I can't even imagine now that you're having a second child, like how that continues to evolve through your life. But yeah, the first time it really kind of messes you up. And you know, that coupled with the grief, the waves of grief that I've been riding already for a year. And all I could do was really just be in it and lay down and rest and eat fruit, try not to be nauseous. It was a very intense first trimester. But I felt happy to be pregnant, and I felt excited to be growing life. And I think maybe toward the second trimester, when I started to feel better, but I also started to feel like the movement and, you know, started to feel a little belly, then I started to feel a bit more of a connection to that. And that felt really special and very, just really cool to be like growing life. And like I said, I was never around birthing and children. And so it was all very new to me. The rest of my pregnancy was mixed. In terms of me being in a pregnant body, for the most part through the second and the start of the third trimester, I felt pretty good. The last few weeks were hard. It was very hot where I was living, and I definitely felt very heavy and just kind of ready to be done with being pregnant and not able to move around so much, and just low energy, and the heat was really getting to me. But emotionally, was very mixed. Emotionally, in terms of being pregnant, I loved it. And I felt, yeah, just this beautiful connection. I would speak to my baby. It was a surprise. I didn't know if it was a girl or a boy. I didn't really want to do all these ultrasounds and know all of these things. I felt like, wow, there's so little magic that we have left in the world. And like, what does it matter if I know now if it's a girl or a boy? I don't need to pick a name until I meet this child. But on a on another level emotionally, that like semi unrelated to the pregnancy, things at home were really not good. And so it was a very mixed and difficult time. I was like overjoyed to be pregnant and, you know, forming this bond and this connection with this being that I was growing in my body. And then things with my partner were just getting awful and out of control at home. And so having to hold both of those worlds and energetically wanting to like protect my child from what I was experiencing and living at home was a very big thing to hold, especially living far away from my friends and not really having the community for something so intense.
Yeah, I think that must have been really, really difficult. Especially, yeah, he is the father of your child and you were so happy about that child. And then the relationship basically, little spoiler alert, breaking apart during the pregnancy and shortly after birth. But yeah, let's get to the birth first before we talk about the relationship aspect a little bit more. How many weeks were you when the birth started and how did you know that labor had begun?
I thought I was 39 weeks, but my midwife told me later, based on how my daughter was looked, some features on my daughter, that it was probably closer to 38 weeks. You know, she had like hairy shoulders and things like that, that show that the development is a little bit less, which I love. You know, I love that we don't know exactly. It's one of the big mysteries of life. So my midwife had arrived, thankfully. She came down, she lived like on the other side of the country. So she came down with her daughter. And the day after she arrived, I started to feel like early labor, which kind of felt like, from memory, kind of felt like period cramps, like coming and going, these waves of cramps. And so I went to collect. She brought from a friend of hers a birth pool. So we went to collect that to set it up in the house. And, you know, it really would have been such a beautiful day to just rest and be with my feelings and prepare myself. And yet that's not at all what we did. And my partner had us running errands, all the things that he needed to get done, because by our calculation, the labor started about a week earlier than we thought it was going to start. And so in like one of the hottest days in a car with no aircon, we spent the day in the town doing errands when I really truly should have been resting at home. And so just like riding these waves of cramps, and in between that, having to be like the Spanish speaking person to, I don't know, get some fabric so he could make curtains or whatever it was he was going to do. But I did manage a last swim in the sea, and that was really beautiful. So then that progressed. So that started, I think it was a Thursday. And that night we went for dinner with my midwife and my doula. And I had my last burger and then went home and went to bed. And the labor pains, or like it kind of kicked into more intense contractions. And I think that we called them and they came around 2 or 3 in the morning.
And what happened then?
So this is like Thursday night going into Friday. And my labor continued for a few days. So in total, I was in labor for about 4 days. And we were at home. And I was kind of coming in and out of the intensity of it. We were, you know, doing different positions, filling the pool. We had run out of gas at home to heat water. And so my midwife decided to keep my partner busy and have him start a fire so that he could heat water on this fire. And so they were trying to heat water with this fire and with these like coffee filter machines to fill the pool, which obviously was just never going to happen because we didn't have hot water at the house. And so that was all happening outside. And inside, I was just kind of journeying through this, this experience that was going through periods of incredible intensity and then kind of coming out of it. one thing that I feel like really was a big block for me was that I was having really intense pain in my back. And like the contractions were intense, but the pain in my back was so, so strong. I feel like I wasn't able to relax and just kind of move through it because this pain in my spine was like just so full on. So I think that that's one of the big pieces for me that was like kind of holding me back. I mean, now looking back, obviously there's other dynamics at play. But I moved through this weekend, basically from Thursday to Sunday night, Monday. And at some point, I think on Sunday night or Monday morning, my waters broke, but my dilation wasn't progressing. And again, I think it was because of the pain. And having been in labor for all of these days, I was getting quite weak. The back pain was really intense and I hadn't slept. I hadn't eaten. She kept trying to give me like coconuts and smoothies and I just was not hungry. Anytime I had a smoothie, it just kind of made me throw up. And so she suggested that we go to Plan B, to the birth clinic, to get an IV to gain some strength and to get an epidural so that I could sleep. And so I kind of thought about it for a while and then decided, actually, even though that wasn't at all my plan and what I had originally wanted, that I was going to go for it. And so we moved to the birth clinic on Monday at some point, maybe late morning, lunchtime, I'm not really sure. And we're admitted in. And they did like some blood tests, which I think is standard procedure when they admit you in. Also, because my water had broken however many hours before, they check your white blood cells. And because my white blood cells were high, they gave me antibiotics, which also I didn't want. I actually think my white blood cells were high because I had been really sick. I'd had a flu or maybe COVID again for the last week just before I went into labor. I had an epidural. It didn't really work. It was incredibly weird. One half of my body was numb. The other half was still having these really intense contractions and pain. So I was kind of, you know, in and out of sleep, just being woken up, like jolted awake by this intense one-sided pain. But it allowed me to kind of rest somewhat. They tried to give me synthetic oxytocin, but I refused it. And actually, my partner, I will credit him with this. He suggested that we do some like Wim Hof. And so I was sat on a gym ball doing Wim Hof through my contractions for, I think, 30 minutes to boost my oxytocin. And it really worked.
So the Wim Hof like breathing techniques.
The Wim Hof breath work, yeah.
Yeah. And just a question, was your midwife allowed, like your external midwife, was she allowed to come to the birth clinic? And could she still be like your attending midwife, or was she just there more or less as a doula or support person?
No, we all went together. My midwife, my doula, my partner, myself. And other than the tests and them administering the epidural that I requested and, you know, the IV or whatever, it was up to us. So we chose not to have any other sort of help or intervention from them. And even after the birth, they were kind of on standby should we need them, but they were like outside the room very respectfully, which was beautiful. I'm really happy that that's the place that we went to.
Yeah. And just a quick question. So if that birth clinic had epidurals, what else did they offer in terms of like medical intervention? Could they have performed a cesarean if needed, or would that have happened at the hospital?
This place does everything. So they have an operating room. They can do cesarean. I actually have a friend who had a cesarean there. They had the possibility for that as well.
Okay, but they were still really hands-off with you and had the external midwife attend your birth, which is beautiful. So yeah. What happened after you got a little bit of rest with that one-sided epidural and a bit of Wim Hof oxytocin boosting breathing?
At some point I went to the bathroom. So I had a room with a bed and a couch. I think there was maybe a kitchenette. I'm not sure. I never went there. And a bathroom, like all private to me. And went to the bathroom to, I'm not sure, pee maybe. And my midwife was like, stay in there and breathe. Because obviously that the toilet seat allows that kind of drop. She had brought to my house like a birthing stool, but I don't think we brought it to the clinic. And so I just sat on the toilet and, you know, sounded through the contractions, and they were just kind of increasing, and, you know, someone would bring some essential oils or something at some point and pop in and chat to me and see if I was okay. But they kind of left me to it because they could tell that I was in this place where I was progressing and just needed to be in my own energy. My partner had gone back to the house to get some things or tidy up or something. And so it was just me in the bathroom. My midwife and doula were in the room and kind of present, but not in the way. And yeah, I just sat there and moved through it. And as I started to get to the point where I was ready, I moved to my hands and knees in the bathroom floor. My partner was there. We were all in this small bathroom. And so, yeah, I birthed on all fours in the bathroom on the floor.
So by that time, the epidural had worn off, so you could...
Oh, completely, yeah.
Basically be on your hands and knees again and be stable. Who caught the baby? Did you catch her yourself, or did the midwife do it and then pass her through?
The midwife caught her and passed her straight to me. And then they helped me get back into the room and onto the bed. And yeah, it was kind of a little bit, yeah, I don't want to say confused. I was just not quite back in the world yet. So especially after 4 days, but yeah, the intensity of it and the kind of primal energy of that birth portal was still ongoing. As I found myself on the bed holding this baby being like, wow, here it is. Oh, and it's a girl. And not long after that, my midwife was helping me to kind of breathe and birth the placenta. But that I did on the bed.
Okay. And did you latch her straight away, or did she do a breast crawl?
I latched her, maybe not straight away, but yeah, within the first 15 minutes or so. She didn't do the crawl, I don't think. No. But she did manage to latch. She was tiny. She was 2.5 kilos. Yeah, she was really sweet. Small baby.
Did you have any tears?
Yes, I had a tear, but no stitches. My midwife said that it would repair naturally. And she did aftercare with that, but I didn't get any stitches.
Okay. And how were the first few hours after birth? How long did you stay in that clinic, and when did you take her home?
So she was born, it was almost 9 p.m. And by the time I birthed the placenta and, you know, everything was okay and we cut the cord later, it was late and I was starving because I hadn't eaten in 4 days. So we tried to order some food. The people of the clinic made sure we were okay. They had a restaurant, but it was closed by then. My midwife and doula made sure everything was okay. And then they went to sleep because obviously they had been with us for a few days as well. So we spent that night in the clinic. I don't think I slept a lot. I think I was really on this like adrenaline high. I think I pretty much spent the whole night just staring at my baby who was like nuzzled in my arm. And we went home the next day, I'd say around lunchtime. There was like a lot of waiting because it was in a clinic. Then we had to take certain boxes of like a pediatrician had to just do a check and make sure everything was okay. I think a nurse had to check me and make sure I was okay. Because they issued a birth certificate, or like the first part of a birth certificate, a paper that you use to get your birth certificate. I don't know what it's called. They have to like tick certain boxes because, you know, they're the ones issuing it. So there was just like waiting around for that. And that's why we were there till about lunchtime, but it was just the one night.
Now, before we talk about your postpartum, just because you've mentioned that you had such long prodominal labor and also lots of back labor, that sounds to me like your baby was maybe posterior or in a bit of a funny position. Was there anything that the midwife or the doula tried in those four days to maybe turn her or get her into a better position?
I'm not actually sure if she was in a different position. There were no hindrances to the birth other than the pain. And my thinking really is, so like I have from a long time ago history of back pain, and I think it was more related to my old back issues. Also, my child was very active in the womb and is incredibly active today. And like potentially she was just kicking on a vertebrae or something. I'm not really sure. But no, there wasn't. I mean, I don't remember them trying to turn the baby by. I think everything was okay in terms of positioning.
Okay. So what happened in the days and weeks following the birth? I know that you're a self-nourishment coach. You had probably prepared for a restful postpartum, and that didn't really happen. So yeah, what was your plan and what was your reality?
One of the beautiful things I think about how much rest I was taking in pregnancy is that I was able to read a ton about pregnancy, about birth, about postpartum. And I'm obsessed with postpartum rest. And I think one day maybe I'll support others in this, because I think it's just such an incredible and important part of the whole process. And it's very underlooked in most Western cultures. Many Eastern cultures have this tradition of spending at least a month in deep rest and being nourished by the people around us, our family, our friends, our support, bringing people in. And so my plan was to spend a month at home, resting, eating warm foods, just bonding with my child, and really doing very little. And then to then ease out of that very slowly, we had planned to move overseas. And so the idea would be that we would leave, I think it was going to be 3 months after the birth. So there was just time to just be very slow with it all and not have to get on planes and fly across the world. The reality was in kind of two pieces. I did spend a month at home and I did very little in that time. But things at home with my partner were really, really bad at this point. And kind of shockingly to me, even just within a few days after the birth, when things are very raw and very new and also can be very challenging, you know, your milk hasn't come in yet and you've got this baby that's screaming at you because it's hungry, but you haven't figured out how to latch. And so it can be a very difficult time. For me, it was a very hard day or two where all of that was happening. And you've got this like emotional, hormonal crash. And yeah, that was, I don't want to say coupled with, but like what happened at home didn't support that at all. And my partner's behavior that had already been very bad and very narcissistic when I was pregnant, not only continued, but got worse. And I was just in complete shock that anyone could, I don't know, be so self-centered or be anything other than supportive and caring, having just watched someone be in labor for 4 days and birth their child into the world. I was not really back in the world. I was still bleeding. I couldn't walk. But for me, that moment really shook me and changed something profound in me and allowed me to really see the reality of the situation and recognize that all of it had nothing to do with me, but also it was never going to change because if in that moment when you have a newborn child in front of you, you can't make a different choice, then nothing will ever change. The next few weeks were, not great in terms of the situation at home and, like, let's say the emotional care and support that I would have wanted. But I managed to contain a bubble with my daughter and have that bonding. I stayed in bed. I rested. I was eating warm, nourishing foods. I just breastfed, and she just basically ate and slept and ate and slept, and, you know, what newborns do. And I rested and I read and watched shows and slept and tried to stay in that bubble as much as possible.
Yeah, but then it eventually came to the breakdown of the relationship, and you decided not to move to where your partner was moving next, but move to a different country with your daughter. How old was she when you moved across the world?
So my daughter was 1 month, maybe just under a month. Just under a month, I decided to leave. The situation had been really bad and continued to get kind of scary. And one day I saw an opportunity to leave, and I took it and made a plan to leave that same day. And so I coordinated with some people who could support me and help me. And that night took my almost 1 month old baby from my 1 month of bed rest and got driven to the airport. And so my first outing after my time at home was to an airport and to get on a plane to go to Mexico City, because I didn't yet have a birth certificate for my daughter, so I couldn't go anywhere else. I then spent 3 weeks in Mexico City doing the paperwork that I needed for her, getting her a birth certificate and her passport, and then took her. So she was less than 2 months, and we went overseas.
Wow. It's still, I mean, I'm in awe of you and your whole journey, but it still pains me to that day to think that you and your little daughter had to go through that and didn't have more support. I very, like, vividly remember the phone call when you told me all of that, and I just thought, oh my god, Kiara, I had no idea what you've been going through. So just to say again, I'm in absolute awe of you and your strength. And when you arrived back in Europe with your daughter, did you have some time to kind of rest some more or catch up on the postpartum?
I arrived to my mother's place in Portugal. So I had somewhere to stay. We were very comfortable there. We had a room, big bed. We were, let's say, safe, you know. But the relationship with my family is complicated. And though we had a place to stay, it was otherwise quite unsupportive. But again, I managed to create and, like, protect this space to rest. So I had gone from being in bed for a month to being in a city for 3 weeks, going to all these different government offices to get my paperwork done, begging people because it was a different state to where she was born. And so it's complicated in my somewhat broken Spanish. And eventually these people helped me and I got everything I needed. And then when we arrived in Portugal, there was nothing that really needed to be done. So as much as possible, I tried to rest and just protect that space again and nourish. But I found myself in, though an incredibly different situation and nowhere harmful, just emotionally difficult and just a lot of judgment and projections, as we can see with families.
Yeah, I mean, that, of course, is a whole different story. I think for now, I would just like to thank you for sharing your story and where can women that want to work with you find you?
Thank you for having me and inviting me to share my story. It's not something that I've really publicly shared. So I'm really, yeah, it feels great to actually talk about it more than just with a friend. Obviously, you're a friend, but in a public space. So I am in the process of doing my website at the moment. So it'll be up in the next couple of weeks, and that will be chiaragallardi.com. And at the moment, I am on Instagram. That's at chiaragallardi_. And yeah, I share a lot of tips and practices and a lot of my pillars of self-nourishment on Instagram. So you can follow me there.
I will put all of that in the show notes, of course. And yes, massive thank you. And I wish you and your daughter all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. This was Chiara's birth story. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, please leave a review and share it with a friend. That would be super helpful to me so that more people can benefit from these beautiful birth stories. Thank you very much.